Welcome to The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. First Merchants Bank, helping you prosper.
Put it in the upper right-hand corner, just like a postage stamp. That's a good bingo!
Get ready to learn more about the Columbus Blue Jackets players and coaches, as well as find out what's going on this week in the NHL. Now let's join Bob McGilligan and Jody Shelley for The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank.
Blue Jackets getting set for the next two games of their homestand. They've got the New York Islanders tomorrow night. They've got the Philadelphia Flyers on Saturday before hitting the road for four more games. Bob McGilligan and Jody Shelley with you here on the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. And Jody, the Blue Jackets come into tomorrow night's game having won back-to-back games. What the heck's going on right now? You beat Pittsburgh. Okay, I get that. I understand. Pittsburgh, well, I was going to say they're trending downward, but all of a sudden they're right back in the playoff race. But you get the Colorado Avalanche then that comes in on Saturday, and the Blue Jackets just basically took over that game in the second period, the period that's been the biggest problem for them throughout the entire year. They took it over and they put it away. It was a pretty impressive victory, wasn't it?
You know, it really was. And when you look at this team and what we're used to seeing with them, like, they were first on pucks. They had an extra jump that Colorado didn't have. They had a game plan that they got established, I'd say, after 8 minutes in. The goalie, Tarasov, when you have a goalie that makes those saves and gives you a chance to do that, you know, he can find your footing, and that's what happened. It wasn't like they looked up at the score clock and they were down a couple goals early. It was a game they established, and then they stuck with the game plan at home, and Pascal Vincent did a good job with his matchups. The guys rose to the occasion. But really, Bob, it's the goaltending, right? I mean, you look at crucial parts of that game, the penalty kills, it was a big save or a good block or a good clear, and you get the confidence in front of the goalie once you know he's going to lock things down for you. And it was a very impressive team victory. And you look at the Blue Jackets when they beat the Vegas Golden Knights, the New York Rangers, some of these teams that are high-flying, and you see that it's not a great matchup. Well, now guys like Gaunce have settled into a role too, and I think the coach and the coaching staff is learning how to use him better, just due to lack of personnel. Getting Danforth back, I love that player. I think he's great with Malatesta on that line with Carson Meyer. They bring some energy. They don't lose momentum. They can gain a little bit back. And I was at ice level, and I saw some frustration out of the Colorado Avalanche, and I thought that was it was so fun to see, and it was great for our fans back at Nationwide Arena.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun. And I want to get more into the goaltending that you were talking about, because Daniil Tarasov has been on fire. And this is not just as of late. This is going on like 2 months now that he has played extremely well. We've talked about this guy all season long. The Blue Jackets have been waiting for this version of Daniil Tarasov to see. Remember, he was injured before camp. He didn't take part in camp. He didn't get back into the lineup until the season was going on. And he really never was the player that they wanted him to be, needed him to be, or the player that he can be. I think right now he is that guy. And would you agree that it's really important to see Tarasov playing like this at the end of the season, going into the summertime, because there are decisions a new general manager has got to make with that position, and it's going to be a lot easier making the decisions when you have Tarasov playing like he is right now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think of all that this organization has put into place, and when you don't have a goaltender and you have question marks in that area, it really, your plan, it doesn't matter what your plan is. The goaltender, the coach, the way they play, the players you have, they all got to match up. And it starts with the goaltender. And right now you have confidence. If you're looking at this roster, you know you have a number one goalie. Elvis is playing better too. But Daniil Tarasov, to me, is the number one on this team. He's big. He's smooth. He works at it. He reminds me a little bit of Sergei Bobrovsky in his personality. He's quiet, but you can tell he's pushing himself in his own way. He's got a quiet confidence in himself, and I really like watching him play, and I really like what he's brought to this organization.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. What he has brought has been terrific. I also want to talk to you about the call-up the Blue Jackets made yesterday. Jake Christensen goes down to Cleveland. David Yurichek has been called up. It looks like he's going to get another opportunity to skate here in the NHL. You know what I found funny yesterday while I was searching Twitter? Well, I'm not searching. I was bored and I was looking. It found me, to be honest with you. But there are some people that the Blue Jackets fans, a lot have complained throughout the course of the year that David Yurecek's been in Cleveland. I know you and I are on the same page when we talk about development, and it's okay for a defenseman, especially the second-year pro, to be there. But then yesterday, there were Cleveland fans that were saying, well, that's good because he's been a little bit erratic here, so maybe it'll help to let him go to Columbus and play a little bit. I found that very ironic, but the fact of the matter is David Yurecek's a former sixth overall pick by the Blue Jackets. They want to give him another look before the end of the year.
Yeah, and hopefully he gets a good opportunity to play in some situations. And, Bob, that's your own fault that you're on Twitter looking at that stuff. I mean, I do love to do it just to see other opinions. And you're right, it gives you a little bit of a temperature of what's going on. But I like seeing him in a clean slate. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's been down in the minors. I think that's the best thing for him. We know he's got to play big minutes. He's part of a winning atmosphere down there. He's had to earn his way up here. And now he does. So good for him. And yeah, there's been a lot of noise around Yurecek, and I get it. With social media, everyone can have access to throw their opinion out there. But I like what the Blue Jackets have done here. There's a plan with this young man. He's going to be a bright part of the future here. And now he comes back up later in the season. And I remember being in the minors and seeing guys go up, and I was upset that I was not the guy going up. And you're happy for them, but you work a little bit harder and you understand your game a little more and you watch other players go up there and do well and have success. That drives you to be a better player, a more detailed player, maybe better habits off the ice. And I don't know, as a young man, you don't know what you don't know. That's a situation we're all in. And now he will, hopefully through experience of playing, he comes in here and feels more comfortable and finds his role. And I look at young players like Cole Sillinger. He knows his role. And the quicker you can get to your role and not try to do everything on the ice, the more success you'll have in the NHL.
And I think it's great they're bringing him in right now because you're playing playoff teams the rest of the way. So this is a really good opportunity to gauge what he has learned throughout the course of the year and put him up against some of the best of the best.
Yes, I agree with that too. And you're coming into a team that's won a couple games now, a team that has found the way they want to play. And, it's easier when you come into a team that's more defined. I find when I watch the Blue Jackets the last couple of games, previous to that, they were defined in moments, but then games got away from them. Now, let's see how he does. They're going to be road games, so there's going to be different matchups. Teams are going to probably go after the young defenseman. If you're coaching against him, you probably try to expose him. See how he handles that. I think it's a really good test.
Well, I should have mentioned this at the start of the show, but Jody's actually in New York. He's been doing some work for the NHL Network and doing some things there in the city. And coming up next, Jody, I had a chance to catch up with one of your former head coaches, Ken Hitchcock, who's going to be here tomorrow night. He's now a Hall of Famer, and I had a chance to talk with him. What do you remember the most about playing for Hitch?
He was such a detailed head coach. He had a game plan every night. I think it was 6 or 8 points on the dry erase board. And if you followed those points, Bob, you would probably win the game every time. He is that detailed of a coach. I also remembered he was hard on players. He made sure when he got behind the bench that he was going to stay on top of the details of the game, whether it was positioning or effort or the way you saw play. He was very on top of it. But what I remember most is his thorough preparation for every single opponent.
Well, we're going to talk with him. I'm going to talk with him about his long career and how he made it to the National Hockey League and eventually into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That is coming up next. Ken Hitchcock joins me as the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank, continues here on 97.1 The Fan.
You can take home a piece of the game when you enter to win a jersey off our backs, presented by Kroger. Plus, score 2 tickets to see the Blue Jackets take on the Philadelphia Flyers on Saturday night. Just get your phone right now and text the word jersey to 26791 for your chance to win. Again, text jersey to 26791. Message and data rates may apply. The Blue Jackets are getting set to take on the New York Islanders tomorrow night before the Flyers come to town on Saturday. And tomorrow, we are going to honor former Blue Jackets head coach Ken Hitchcock, who back in November was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Now, yesterday, while Jody was traveling to New York, I had a chance to catch up with Ken Hitchcock and talk about his career and his coming back to Columbus. Well, first of all, Ken, I want to ask you about
getting inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame? Because obviously it is a lifelong dream for so many people. But for you, when you got into this profession, did you dream that someday, hope, dream, whatever it is, did you ever think you would be in the Hockey Hall of Fame?
No, Bob, not at all. You're early in your career, you're just trying to survive, you know, and I was lucky because when I went to junior in Kamloops, we had a great team for all 6 years. So it gave me a lot of confidence in the things I could do. And, you know, I going to work for Dallas in Kalamazoo in their minor league team was the best thing that happened to me. Spending 3 years in Kalamazoo before I went into Dallas really helped me hone my craft. But the first part, you're just trying to not step on toes and stay out of everybody's way. And I was lucky. I had a lot of good players. I had some great general managers. And they allowed me to do my thing. They had my back all the time, and they allowed me to do my thing.
You talk about all those places or some of the places that you stopped along the way, but I want to go right back to the beginning for you because there are so many coaches in the National Hockey League that played at a high level, and your story is so different from everybody else's. I mean, yes, you started as a hockey player as a kid, but you never got to a high level as a player, but you did get there as a coach. I mean, you took a route, Hitch, that I don't know if anybody will ever take again, going from working in a sporting goods store to being a National Hockey League head coach that winds up in the Hall of Fame. It was at a young age where the coaching really appealed to you, wasn't it?
Well, it was. You know, I was playing hockey at a pretty high level, and then I made a career change. I was snowmobile racing at that time, and I decided to take that path, and I stopped playing for almost 3 years, and then I came back into it. And I can tell you, the minute I went and started coaching midget hockey, I fell in love with it. And I loved the aspect of learning and teaching, and I had some great mentors. The college coaches in the Edmonton and Alberta area were terrific. We had the Olympic team coach, Dave King, who was tremendous and helped me so much. So I had a lot of support. They knew I was keen and they knew I was interested and they were willing to teach me. And I think that gave me a big leg up on a lot of people, Bob.
I got to go back for a second here, Hitch. You just talked about you quit playing hockey to become a snowmobile racer. Tell me about what was snowmobile racing like at that time?
It was an oval track on a lake and you basically raced all day for ribbons. You know, it was just something, it was a real passion for me, and I really enjoyed it. I knew I wasn't going to get to the end of the day as a player. I wasn't quick enough. And so I wanted to try this, just, you know, kind of change a pace. But I came back to coaching right away, and the minute I stepped on the ice to start coaching, I really, really enjoyed it.
I know you talked about some of the great coaches that you've watched and have mentored you and all of those things, but was your dad the first coach that you really watched closely and started learning from?
Oh, yeah, Bob. My dad took me everywhere. We would he coached two teams in the community that we lived in. He coached the midget, and then there was a team after midget before junior called juvenile, and he coached both teams. So I followed him everywhere. I was at the rink morning, noon, and night. He would take me to the pro teams practices, and he was friends with all the coaches in the area. So, you know, and that's when I started studying coaches was really with my dad. He paid more attention to the coaches than he did the players. And I found that fascinating. I learned so much from just hanging around him and his friends and his other coaching buddies.
And you were really a rink rat, weren't you?
Well, I went from school, walked across the two soccer fields to the rink, and I stayed there until closing time every day. And I did my homework at the shack. I did everything there. We scraped and flooded at the end of the day with my dad. And if they would have had a bed there, I would have never left the shack, to be honest with you.
Let me ask.
I really enjoyed it, Bob. And I started studying coaches, like, you know, some people's players are their heroes. Mine are guys like Glenn Sather, John Muckler, Claire Drake, Dave King, George Kingston, Wayne Fleming, all these guys that were coaches, career coaches, those are my kind of my heroes growing up.
I'm talking with Ken Hitchcock, former Blue Jackets coach. He's actually going to be here before the Blue Jackets take on the New York Islanders, being honored for getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I want to ask you about working at the United Cycle Store in Edmonton. And I've got to tell you, I've been in this league now. This is my 15th year in this league. And I remember when Ed Milliken used to be our television producer, and we would fly into the airport in Edmonton and would be making that long drive to the hotel, and we would pass the store, and Ed would always say, "There's where Ken Hitchcock used to work." And we still do that to this day. We just did it a couple of weeks ago. I always come down and I go, "Hey, where did Hitch used to work? Where's that place?" So tell me how you go from basically working at a sporting goods store and then creating that first opportunity to start coaching youngsters and get your foot in the door.
You know what, Bob? The sporting goods store, United Cycle, had a real sense of community. And they gave me the leg up because I was in constant contact with all the minor hockey associations in northern Alberta. So I had a ton of contacts. And I would go and watch kids' practices, and I would go and watch games. And that sense of community, first at United Cycle, and then secondly, being able to associate with all the people in the Minor Hockey Association really gave me a leg up. And I was able to, you know, foster friendships and relationships at that time. And it was really impactful for me when I decided I wanted to get into coaching.
Did you really sharpen Mark Messier's skates? There's some kind of a rumor or lore out there that you did that.
Everybody talks about that. They think I sharpened 20,000 pairs. I probably sharpened 200 pairs. But it was funny because on Saturdays, it was so busy on the skate sharpening machines that everybody had to dig in. So the only time I ever sharpened was on Saturday to relieve some of the guys that were doing it 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And Mess's skates sometimes would go in there. He wanted them a special way, and everybody knew it. So whether it was me, Wilf, or any of the guys at work, we knew the way that Mark wanted skates. So he demanded they were sharpened a certain way, because Mark played all his minor hockey at Edmonton growing up, right until he was 17. From age 10 or 11 on, I think he was around the store all the time.
Was it when you got to Kamloops that it really started to become real for you? And when I say became real, I mean, is it once you get into junior hockey, do you start to feel like, hey, if this goes well, I can start making some steps toward the National Hockey League?
I never thought like that, Bob, but what I thought was when I was coaching in Kamloops and we had so much success for all 6 years, I felt like all the things I learned about selling and buying in at the store, I could put in place as a coach. So I gained a lot of confidence by there, but I never had any aspirations of moving up. I got phone calls, and then I just took jobs. You know, at first it was from Philly, then Dallas, but it was really that 6 year span in Kamloops that I thought, you know, I could do this for a living. You know what? At that time, the salaries weren't big; they weren't substantial at all, but it was a comfortable living, and I felt I could. Yeah, there was a period of time I felt like I could stay in Kamloops forever, to be honest with you.
I know he coached a lot of great players in Kamloops, guys that went on to have great success in the National Hockey League. I want to ask you about one of those guys because I now work with him day in and day out, and that's Mark Recchi.
Oh, Rec. People don't know this, but we traded 7 players to get Mark. And we traded 7 players to get Mark Recchi and Craig Berube. And it was the best trade we ever made in the Western Hockey League. And Mark came over. He just took over our team. He brought us to a whole other level. And, you know, we spent 3 years together, and it was terrific. Like, Rex was one of those guys that his determination and his sense of timing drew everybody in, and he held people accountable. And, I learned a lot from Mark as far as what needs to be said and done as a leader. And, you know, we became great friends with his family, and I'm so happy for Mark and the career he had and everything that's going on. He's he's a great person, and he's a really smart hockey guy.
And you learned from a lot of players on that team, didn't you? I mean, Darryl Ray played on that team. Rob Brown is a guy I know that you're still close with. Once upon a time, he scored 49 goals playing alongside of Mario Lemieux. How much did the players help you when you were in Kamloops, Hitch? Because, you know, it's kind of a first go-around for you there. And you were talking about how you put those the sales skills into place that you already knew and got the players to buy in. How much did the players help you when it came to, gaining information to make trades, maybe just figuring out exactly what they needed to succeed? How much were those early years, how formative were those years for you with those players?
Well, I can tell you this, Bob. My first year in the league, I didn't even know where to point the bus. I didn't even know you needed post-game meals. I didn't have a clue because I came from midget hockey where the parents take the kids home after the game. And the players there helped me so much, on places to stay, accommodation, practice times, road trip schedules. I leaned on them hard, and I really leaned on them when there was a chance to make a trade. They knew the players better than I did, and we formed a really good partnership right off the bat. You had Greg Hovland, Mark Recchi, Mark Ferner. You had a lot of really, Darryl Ray, you had a lot of tremendous people that became really significant in the game of hockey, and I leaned on these guys in a huge, huge way.
Talking with Ken Hitchcock, former Blue Jackets coach. He is a Hall of Famer. We're going to honor him before the game against the New York Islanders. Hitch, after those years in Kamloops, as you said, you won a lot of games for 6 years. You had great success there. And then 1990 comes along, and so do the Philadelphia Flyers and your first taste of the National Hockey League as an assistant coach. What was that jump like for you? And it was a couple of jumps, to be honest with you, because what you were just talking about, when you're the head coach in Kamloops, you're making all of those decisions, you're doing all those different things, all of a sudden you're not the head coach, you're not the decision maker, you have different responsibilities, and you're moving up to the best league in the world. What was that transition like for you?
I knew the game technically well at that time, and tactically I knew the game, but personalities wise and how to deal with older players and veteran players, we were a team that was we were in the middle of what was a retool or a reboot. And I was really, in awe of the players, but more important, I was at times overwhelmed that first year in Philadelphia with just the responsibility and the travel and everything like that. Like I wasn't really, because I wasn't a player, Bob. I really wasn't ready for what was going on. So I got up to speed in my second year, but first year I felt like I was really out of my element, to be honest with you. And then in the second year, I caught up, and third year was good for me. So it was one of those times where we're in a rebuild. I was in the middle of the rebuild, and it took me a while to understand what the league was all about.
I'm talking with former Blue Jackets head coach Ken Hitchcock. Back in November, he was inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's going to be here tomorrow night so that we can honor him for that achievement. More with Hitch coming up as the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank, continues here on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. Tonight I'm talking with former Blue Jackets head coach and Hockey Hall of Famer Ken Hitchcock. He'll be here tomorrow, and we'll honor him before the game against the New York Islanders for being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Now, Hitch, we've talked about when you started basically doing youth hockey as a coach, you moved your way to junior hockey in Kamloops, and then wound up in Philadelphia, but not as a head coach for the Flyers. You were an assistant coach for Philadelphia, and then you wound up getting another head coaching job. But this time, it was taking a step back, if you will, to go to the International Hockey League. Bob Gainey, who was running the Minnesota North Stars at the time and eventually the Dallas Stars once they moved, Bob Gainey gave you a chance to be the head coach in the IHL, the AAA affiliate, if you will, for the Stars. And what about that transition? Now you're going back to being a head coach, but it's a different scenario. Now it's player development, getting players ready for the Stars.
You know what, for me, Bob, when I was in Philadelphia for those 3 years, after the third year, I knew I loved the game. I knew I loved coaching, but I also knew I loved something else. And that was I'm not cut out to be an assistant coach. And I didn't care where I went. I had to be a head guy. And with probably 4 days left on my contract, I got a call from Bob Gainey and through Les Jackson and asked me to fly to Minnesota to interview. And I flew to Minnesota. We met for a better part of a day. And I came back to Philadelphia and I got a call the next day and he offered me the job. But I had reached a stage where I knew I couldn't be an assistant coach. I knew there was no fuel for me to be that assistant coach. I wanted to be a head guy. And if I had to go back to junior, I didn't care. But I wanted to be a head coach.
Having that experience, once you started hiring assistant coaches, how much did you draw upon your experience as an assistant coach? Because as I'm hearing you talk about that, I'm thinking about that. You want to be surrounded by the right people, and you want to have the right people in the right roles. Did that, even though you knew you didn't want to be an assistant coach, you had to be a head coach, but that experience that you got with Philly in that role, how much did that help you to be able to select the people that you would work with from there on out?
It was huge. I've said this to people before, one of the smartest coaches I've ever been around is Craig Hartsburg, and we were together in Philadelphia for 3 years. And I knew when I was going to build a staff that I wanted people that were smarter than me, and I knew I wanted to learn from the coaches I hired, and Craig set that bar really high because he's one of the few people I know that has that feel for hockey that's unbelievable, and I knew I needed to hire people that were smarter than me, and every time I tried to build a staff, I wanted the smartest guys available, and I was lucky because I walked into Dallas. And I had Rick Wilson and Doug Jarvis, and they set the bar even higher. And I knew after that, wherever I went, I needed to have really, really good coaches who challenged me, but made me look smart and also held me accountable. I wanted those guys on my staff all the time.
The top of the mountain is winning the Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League, and you were able to reach that point with the Dallas Stars. What was that like for you, that year that you went through and won it all?
You know what, Bob, to be honest with you, there was a 4 or 5 year window there where we were really good. And I felt like we were ready to win in 1998. And Detroit played a game 6 or 7 against us that was unbelievable. And I saw another level, and I knew how close we were, but I also knew there was another level. The whole process between getting to the conference finals, winning the cup, going back to the cup finals, getting back to the conference finals, felt like it was a natural progression. It wasn't surprising. It wasn't shocking. I just thought we were ready a year before, but we weren't. But when I saw the sacrifices that the players were willing to make, I knew we were going to be a tough team to beat in a 7-game series.
And you got it done. And Brett Hull is, he'll never be forgotten for that game-winning goal, will he?
He's a hero in Dallas, and he's a bum in Buffalo.
Absolutely right. Well, after you left the Stars, you ended up going back to the Flyers as a head coach. But let's get to when you got here to Columbus during that 2006-2007 season and spent a couple of years here. Of course, here, Hitch, you are going to always be remembered as the guy that took the Blue Jackets to the playoffs for the very first time in franchise history. The people here revere you for that, and rightfully so. And so do the players that were on that team that got that opportunity to go to the postseason for the first time. But what about you? I mean, here you are. You've already won a Stanley Cup. You've been in the playoffs multiple times. What did it mean for you to take the Columbus Blue Jackets beyond the regular season for the first time in franchise history?
Well, for me, every year I started, I felt like I had a good enough team. I don't care what was there. I felt I could coach a good enough team and coach them up enough to get into the playoffs. But what I was proud about saying about Columbus more than anything, Bob, was the fact that I helped create a culture there that was long lasting. And what I mean by that is that we changed from a group who played a game on the move to a team that checked like crazy. And the year we got into the playoffs was one of the best checking teams I've ever had, the most disciplined team. And we had to do that because we were in a monstrosity of a division, and it was really tough games for us. But we were able to win a lot of hockey games because our attention to detail was impeccable. And it started with Rick. Rick, for this thing to change, and another guy that really I give a lot of credit to is Manny Malhotra. Those two guys need to facilitate change in our group, and they bought in, and our whole team changed. Everything changed, and Rick became, for a period of time there, probably 5 years, the best 200-foot player in the National Hockey League. And even in saying that, even when he was with the Olympics, we always played him against the other team's best player because he was so detail-oriented by then. And I'm really proud of the fact that there was a real strong buy-in from that group. There was a real strong commitment, and it was a fun group to be around. We weren't the most talented team, but, man, we made it hard on you. We checked like crazy, and I thought we played winning hockey every night.
Is it a surprise to you at all that both Rick Nash and Manny Malhotra are still involved in the National Hockey League? Of course, Rick working in the front office here with the Blue Jackets and Manny in the coaching ranks.
No, not at all. I thought Manny really wanted to get into coaching, and I could tell Rick really saw the big picture and he was going to be really good. I think both guys are in the right niche. Manny's a terrific coach, and Rick, for me, is a guy that really gets the big picture and really understands the big picture, and he's a real big asset in the organization.
Well, Hitch, I told you that you're revered for getting the team to the playoffs for the first time here, but how much, I don't know what the word is, satisfaction, pleasure maybe, how much do you get from the fact that your legacy here looks like it's going to live on forever because the cannon was born under your leadership here at Nationwide Arena, and that cannon fired for your teams, that cannon fired against your teams later on when you left and went to coach other places. But you have a real appreciation for history and Civil War. Even though you're Canadian, you're really into Civil War history, and that kind of led to the cannon being brought to Nationwide Arena, and it still fires to this day, as I just said. I don't know if you ever sit and think about that, but I think about it quite often. I mean, every time it fires, that's a direct tip of the cap to you.
Well, I loved it when it fired for us, but I regretted it when I left there. Man, I'll tell you, like, just pulls you right out of your seat. Like, it's awful loud, and it's because we always got beat in Columbus. Columbus kicked our butts a lot of times when I was coaching in St. Louis and in Edmonton. Like, they kicked us hard, and I would just cringe when I knew that damn song was coming out in that Canada. I hated that. But you're right. You know, it gave a great heritage, and, you know, I think there was a lot of things during the Civil War that went on in Columbus that helped the Union cause, so I'm glad to be a small part of it.
I know you don't do it anymore, but you used to get involved in those reenactments once upon a time, didn't you?
Yeah, I stopped about 8 or 9 years ago because it got really physical and it got really big. So I attended the round table and did all the visiting, but I stopped doing all the work. We had a Custer's group. We went to the Little Bighorn and we had a reenactment there. It was a tough 3 days for me, and I said after that reenactment, I'm done. I'm just going to be the guy that talks on the table. That's it for me. That's as far as I'm going.
You know what, though? That's a great strength of yours, Hitch. That's a perfect role for you.
Oh, yeah, the talk, but don't worry about walking the walk. Those days are done.
And what is it going to be like for you to come back to this building and be honored for making it into the Hall of Fame? I know you were here for Rick's number retirement. You got a chance to come back for that. But when you come back now and not behind an opposing bench, but just coming as an invited guest and just being somewhat of a fan to enjoy the game, what does that mean to you?
Well, I've really enjoyed, I've known John Davidson a long time, and Mike Priest and myself are really good friends. So just getting the chance to visit with those guys is terrific for me. And, you know, I feel a real kinship towards Mike, and Mike's been really tremendous for my career and everything. So I can't thank him enough. And, obviously coming to this thing means a lot to me. And, like I've told people before, there's a lot of great places to live in, but you're hard cast to find something better than Columbus, Ohio.
I want to ask you one more thing. As that guy on the outside looking in and having the attachment to those guys that you just talked about, this franchise is in another transition right now where they're searching for a general manager. As you sit and you look at it, you know, how much do you hope that they get it right and it can get back to where it was a couple of years ago? Because I do know that you're a fan of Mike Priest and John Davidson, as you just said, but you're a fan of Columbus and the fans and the team, and you want to see it get back to a high level, don't you?
You know what, Bob? I look at the team this way. You can't teach skill, and there's a real high level of skill. If you had everybody healthy, there's a real high level of skill. If the players can be convinced to do the things that don't require skill, all the working elements of the game, if they can be convinced that it's worthwhile, this turnaround is going to be really quick. And that's what has to be convinced, is the details that go with the work part of the game. If they can be bought and sold in a quick manner, then you're going to see a quick, even quicker turnaround than people are thinking.
Do you think it's harder to sell to players these days because the game has changed so much? And I know you're not in the coaching ranks right now, but you know what's going on. You know how it's changed. Do you think it's a harder sell today?
In some ways it is, and in some ways it's not. If you don't have great leadership who are willing to partner up with the coach, then it's always going to be a tug of war. But if your leadership is in partnership with the coach, then it can be sold in a really good way. And I think that's the challenge, is to get the leadership in line with the coach so the rest of the players can follow suit. And I think the biggest challenge right now is getting your leadership firmed up and getting them to understand they can provide the direction on a daily basis, and they become partners with the coach. And if that comes out, good things are going to happen.
Hitch, you're sharp as a tack as ever, and I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me some time before you come here to Columbus. I can't wait to see you when you get to town, and I hope you soak it all in before that game against the Islanders. Let the Blue Jackets fans embrace you and appreciate you once again.
Thanks a lot, Bob. I really appreciate it.
That is Hockey Hall of Famer and former Blue Jackets head coach Ken Hitchcock. In November, he was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and tomorrow night, before the Blue Jackets take on the New York Islanders, we are going to honor him at Nationwide Arena. I hope that you will be there. We're also celebrating you, the fifth line, this Saturday when Philadelphia is in town. The first 10,000 fans will receive a nesting doll set presented by Schmitz. The puck will drop against the Flyers at 7 o'clock. Get your tickets by going to bluejackets.com/on sale. Jody Shelley rejoins me next as we close out this week's edition of The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank on 97.1 The Fan.
Welcome back to The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. Tomorrow, the New York Islanders are here to take on the Blue Jackets at 7 o'clock. Really another must-win game for the New York Islanders. And Jody, you're right there. You've been in New York the last couple of days, in the heart of it all. The Islanders just finished with back-to-back games. They beat Chicago last night, barely, but they beat them. They got by them. But they're still on the outside looking in. Washington has that last wild card spot right now, even though they're tied in points with Detroit at 82. Detroit is out because of the tiebreaker. The Islanders are sitting there with 81 points. Pittsburgh, with a huge third period last night, beat New Jersey, sorry. And that has them only 3 points back. They probably feel they should be 2 points back, but the Blue Jackets stole that shootout on Saturday. So what a mess at the bottom of the wild card standings.
It's crazy. And Philadelphia, they're right there. They're at 83, and Washington's at 82 in the second wild card. And Philadelphia, in their last 10 games, have gone 2-5-3. So they're struggling a little bit. How about Florida? They're up there at the top. They're second. They're trying to track down Boston. They've gone 2 wins in their last 10 games. So there's teams struggling above. I know you're not going to catch Florida, but Philadelphia and Washington, they are in dire straits right now. And Washington plays Pittsburgh the next game. I think that's tomorrow night. So Pittsburgh now, if they beat Washington, they could be 1 point out, Bob. They were 9 out when we were in Pittsburgh. What was that, a week ago?
Yeah.
And everyone was singing the blues. But boy, if they get things together, Carlson finds his role, the power play gets going, which has been dismal. Look out for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I love this race. I mean, at least it's a race. Last year was all set. You knew that Toronto and you knew the matchups in the first round were already set months before the season ended. And, you know, this is more exciting to me. I love that. I mean, you want to see someone grab it, but as a fan's perspective, no. I mean, even Buffalo last night, they put on a really good clinic and you know, they erupted for, I forget how many goals. Yeah, I think they had 6 or 7 goals last. 6 goals they beat the Capitals. And so that's what's keeping this interesting. You know, and the Blue Jackets, tomorrow night's game is huge. They're playing the New York Islanders, who are 1 point out of the second wild card. And they struggled last night on a back-to-back. It was their back-to-back against Chicago. They got it done late in overtime. But, you know, I love for the Blue Jackets now. You come into Columbus to play them, and they're playing well. So this could be a real dent in the standings. If you want to help Pittsburgh, I guess, who has to help himself, the Blue Jackets got to beat the Islanders. And we don't want to help Pittsburgh, but no. You know how it goes.
No, exactly. And the Islanders drawing the short straw on the schedule, right? 3 games, 4 days, and yeah. They have to travel today. So that's not ideal for them. You know, they went forever without playing a division game. They just got back into division play this week, but they had gone like, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks without playing a game within the division or something stupid like that.
Wow. Yeah, that hurts. I mean, that's something. That's a team, too. Sorokin is not playing great, by all accounts. How about Pittsburgh with Nedeljkovic? He's played every game. I mean, yeah. He played the back-to-back.
Well, Jari was supposed to play the other night, and then he got sick, and he couldn't play.
Is that what it was?
He was supposed to play not last night's game, but the one before. And then he came up sick in the afternoon, so they had to switch it around there.
And the Devils, I mean, they got out to a lead. It was 3-1, and then the Penguins stormed back. It was just it's incredible what's happening. If the Penguins get confidence, Bob, I'm serious. They're the team that has the pedigree, right? They're the team that has players that understand this type of race. So, and Sidney Crosby, I mean, he's doing nothing but putting up points.
I think I saw somewhere last night, it's the first time that Malkin and Crosby have scored multiple goals in the same period, which is crazy to me.
First time ever?
That's what I thought I saw. Now,
wow.
I'd have to go back and check that. But you'd think as long as they played together, it would have happened before, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But, I mean, that's pretty defined.
Yes. Let's take a quick look at the West, which is not nearly the same race. Although the Kings have the second wild card spot there. They're only 3 ahead of St. Louis. They're 6 ahead of Minnesota. St. Louis looks like it has the most realistic chance. But the West is, well, it's a little bit more set as to who's going to be in, but as far as who's going to play in what position, they're still jockeying for points. Colorado's 3 behind Dallas. Edmonton's 5 behind Vancouver as everybody tries to get in better position. Vegas has finally climbed up right now into the 3rd spot in their division, which is a lock.
Well, yeah, Vegas is playing better hockey. Their defense has been tightened up, and their superstars are Marchessault's got over 40 goals. He's flying right now. When you look at the Central, I know Dallas is leading now by 3, but it's such a critical. I mean, that you got to win the Central, and Colorado understands that. They're 3 behind because I don't think you want to face Winnipeg in the first round. You know, those are 2 really good, heavy, big playoff teams. If you got Dallas, Winnipeg, or Colorado, Winnipeg in the first round. Edmonton still has a chance to track down and catch Vancouver to win the Pacific. And I think that's key, too, because Vegas, you don't want to play Vegas in the first round. They're the defending, you know, they're a team that just won the Stanley Cup. They're a team that's now rounding into form. Their goaltender is better. Edmonton wants to try to track Vancouver. They've got 2 games in hand on them. And I think they go head-to-head here again before the end of the year. So that'll be interesting. Nashville sliding a little bit. They're trying to right their ship, and they were on such a good run. But to me, they're one of those dangerous teams as well. So I agree. St. Louis still has a chance, which surprises me. Don't count out Minnesota. You know, they've got a game in hand. But they're tracking down LA, who's still not totally as – they're not as high-flying as they were earlier in the year. They're playing 500 hockey right now, which might be enough to get that, – that's probably enough to get them in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it might be enough to get them in. They still – they have a game in hand, too. They and Minnesota each have played 74. The other teams have played 75. So
yeah, and when you look at the East, when you look at the East again, Bob, it might be 90 points to get in the playoffs.
Crazy.
It might be 90 points. And if you look at it that way, you know, the Islanders have 14 points available. The Penguins have 14 points available. Washington has got extra. They got 16 points available. But those, that's, it's going to be fascinating to see the, this run. And the Blue Jackets are going to have their hand in it, which is makes it exciting for the players.
Yeah, you're right. They're going to be able to affect people's seasons if they continue to play like they have been playing. Jody, thank you very much. Thanks for checking in from the Big Apple, and have a safe trip back. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yep, see you tomorrow, Bob. Thanks.
All right, that is Jody Shelley, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Nationwide Arena. Blue Jackets Islanders pregame coverage right here on The Fan and the Blue Jackets Radio Network starting at 6:30, also at 6:30 on Bally Sports. Until then, Bob McElligott for Jody Shelley. So long, and thanks for listening to the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank right here on 97.1 The Fan.